I don't think we really kept any Jim when he, ready?
This is side 7 of the interview with Arthur Jaffe.
I don't think Jim Winnegar ever kept anybody out. I don't think he ever promoted a closeness that could have been done. And, you know, that's what I really think has more happened than anything else. But it was interesting that when I left the museum, by the way, I never experienced, it was the one time in my life, maybe the only time, that I never experienced one moment of anti-Semitism.
That's wonderful to hear.
Interesting.
Wonderful to hear.
Absolutely never experienced it. So that when I left and I, you know, talked to Jim, he didn't want me to leave. What can I keep you? How can we keep you here? So I said, you really can. He worried, he said, what I'm worried about most of all is that people will think that you're leaving because we mistreated you.
Isn't that interesting that they would be
That's
so
right.
self-conscious?
Or that there was, that you were unhappy with us here. And I said, Jim, I've already heard that rumor. I've already squashed that rumor. It was true, I'd already heard.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Jews aren't mean. So funny, why is he leaving, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, it wasn't true.
Can we go back to the question that you asked before, Muriel, about what Arthur was doing at the museum? Was he involved with the...
I don't know if we have that on tape.
Because
so,
that's where the tape broke.
What was your involvement in the museum? Was it with endowments or collections or how did...
Well, you'd get involved with everything. When you get into fundraising or endowments for a museum, you've got to become very knowledgeable about everything that's going on there. I was also helping them to get grants. And when you get into grants from the government or from foundations or wherever you're going, you have to become very knowledgeable about the workings of the museum, what they're trying to do, what this exhibition is supposed to be accomplishing, what kind of paintings do they want, why do they want these paintings, what's in their collection already. These are the kinds of questions you would get. So that if they wanted to enlarge their African wildlife exhibit, I had to know why. And I'd get very involved. I would spend hours with the curators and I'd research and give me papers and you go through the whole process of and if I knew of paintings, one of the reasons they were interested in the Jewish community was they felt the major collections were to be found amongst the Jews, and they were correct. And they were looking for certain paintings and who has these paintings and could I help them get them.
Well, you obviously had some kind of an art background if you were a collector.
Self-taught, yes, but I had been collecting a lifetime.
You had to have an eye.
Yes.
And knowledge. They didn't just pluck you out of nowhere.
Well, they did. I mean, I had no, on paper, I had no background.
But Paula knew better.
Paula knew better. And, matter of fact, when I left, I went in to see Jack Lane, who's now took at Leon Arcus's job.
Yeah.
And Jack is Mr. Clean. Have you ever seen Jack Lane?
No.
You never seen Mr. Jack Lane?
Mm-mm.
Bald? Young? Skin as smooth as a baby's rear end? And if you just put a... He looked like Mr. Clean. He stands very erect and he's very proper. He's a graduate of Williams and all that. And I went in to see him and said, Jack, I'm leaving. He said, oh, sorry to hear that. He said, Arthur, he said, I've worked in museums all my life. He says, you're the first director of development that wasn't a schmo. I laughed his way.
Why did you leave?
Well, that's a good question. When Bill Kahn was executive director of the Jewish Federation of Pittsburgh, they had Jerry Soroker, when he retired, as a half-time director of the endowment program. And that didn't work out very well. Half-time never works out very well, and Jerry really kept it half-time one, and I think that Bill wasn't too happy having him around the X around anyway. So Bill was looking for a full-time director of endowment, which they had never had. And somebody had said to him, well, why are you looking around and advertising in New York? And that's the way they go through the Council of Jewish Federation, the placement bureau. We think there's somebody right here in town who would be ideal, you know, and that the person they recommended was me. And so one day he called me. I never met him.
Pardon me, is this the doctor, Bill?
No.
How is that?
C-O-N-N? K-A-H-N. That's Ziggy Khan's son.
Yeah.
Okay. Who was a Pittsburgher by birth and rearing. And I hadn't met Bill. And so Bill said, I want to have breakfast with you. So I said, okay. So I went to breakfast with me. We had breakfast for about an hour. The end of the hour, he said, I want you to leave your job and come to work for me at Federation. I said, well, you're crazy. And I said, why? He told me what he wanted me to do. I said, I don't think so. I said, one is that I'm very happy where I am. I said, I think my wife will kill me if I make a change. I was very excited.
Oh, we want to get the
back up in a minute.
Yeah, I was married at this point.
I said,
if my first wife were around, she would have said, you're absolutely crazy. You're not supposed to make all these changes. You're not supposed to move from your community, leave your home, and you're not supposed to take a new job, and you're not supposed to make all these changes. And I said, I made them all within 2 months. I said, I think she's right. I said, I don't think I can manage another change emotionally. I said, I've had enough. So I don't think I want to do this. So he said, I want you to say no. Oh, he said, I'm taking this, I'm not accepting this. So I want you to think about it. I said, okay, I'll think about it. In the meantime, he's playing upon my Jewish guilt. Okay? That I should be there. That I had unusual talents that fit in. He said, where else are we going to find somebody who's from the Haganah, who has all this background, and you'd be perfect, and he said, people know who you are, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, no. So he kept after me for a year, and I kept telling him, no. And finally, one day, I said, okay. I said, I have to give you an answer. It's not right. I said, you've got to go out and get somebody. He said, I'm holding this job. He said, I can't hold it forever. I've got other people, and I don't want them. I want you. So I talked to May, and she said, what do you want to do this for? I said, I don't know. But I said, maybe I ought to do it. I said, maybe he's right. Maybe I ought to be with it. I haven't lived with the Jewish people for 35 years or whatever now. So I finally said to him, yes. And about a week later, I read in the paper, he's leaving. So I called him up, and I said, no. I said, I have not told anybody I'm leaving, and I'm not going to take it. I said, you didn't tell me you were leaving. I said, one of the reasons I was coming, because you were going to be there, and you knew I thought I could work with you. And I said, one, it's not fair to a new guy coming in. I said, secondly, I don't know if I'm going to like him. I don't know if he's going to like me, and I don't leave under those circumstances. I said, he should have a right to at least interview me and feel whether he wants me or he doesn't want me, and I the same way. So he said, you're right. I said, when you get somebody, let me know. So about 3 months later, he says, we've got our man. I want you to have breakfast with him. So I had breakfast with him, and I called him up afterwards and said, he's fine with me if I'm fine with him. That's how that was arranged. And then they waited a few more months. Because I said, I won't leave until they found a replacement for me. Then I had to go out and find my own replacement, as it turned out. Which is what I had to do in Pittsburgh, too.
All right, now, in this busy time of your moving and changing jobs and all these
terrible
things, how did you have time for where did you fit romance in? How did you meet Maida?
When I sold the business, and I bought a place in Pittsburgh, even though I continued to work in Butler for another 6 months. During that 6 month period, my brother Norman, I don't know if you all know, you know Norman. Norman's an attorney who lives in Pittsburgh but practices in Butler. And Norman was driving back and forth every day, and I started driving with him. And one day he said, I've got somebody he wants you to meet when you're, you know, you're settled in Pittsburgh. I said, I think that's, she's your kind of person. I said, who's that? He said, Meta Lovner, who I didn't know. I said, well, fine. So after, in late that summer, he had a party, and he asked me to come to this party at home. Didn't tell me he was inviting Meta, so he invited Meta.
What's his spell?
M-A-T-A.
M-A-T-A.
Right, who at this point was divorced. And I liked Meta, and we eventually, well, my sister-in-law, she had gone to school with Alice. You know Alice.
Mm-hmm.
And we gone to high school together, Taylor Alder, and had been friends after that, too. And so Alice saw me. She said, well, did you like Meta? I said, yes, very much. He said, well, you gonna call her? I said, yes, I'll call her. So I called her one day, and I said, would you like to go to the public theater? I said, I have a couple of tickets. And Meta said to me, she'll kill me when she hears me tell the story. She said, oh, I'm going with my sister-in-law. So I said, oh, well, okay, and sort of let it go at that. So next time Alice said, well, did you call her? I said, yes, I called her. She said, well, what did she say? I invited her. She said, she's going to the theater with her sister-in-law. And Alice said, shit. We like talking to her.
That's funny. Well, eventually you must have gotten...
Eventually, we did get together. I took her out 3 times and said, I thought we ought to get married. And she said, I can't do anything like this so fast. I said, this is slow for me.
Yeah, she just didn't know.
She just didn't know, but we did.
So you didn't really go out with other women?
Oh, yes.
Oh, you did.
I didn't tell you, that's another story.
Okay.
Well, everybody must have been there with the chicken soup and the
kugels. Exactly, exactly. I mean, I was... After Lois died, I would be invited out to a house, and when I got there, there was nobody warned me, but there was always somebody there. Yes, of course, I went out, and people said, you should meet, and, you know, it was a great revelation for me personally, because I had, you know, when you're married, as I had been married for 29 years, and you live this very insulated life, really. And you really don't know that there's another world out there at all. You hear about it, but you really don't know that. And one, I just found it was another world I tried to do nothing about, one. Number two, that as my children suddenly saw me as this enormous sex symbol, and everybody, women calling, and being invited, and, you know, and that was hot stuff. And but I just found out that any man who could breathe and was practically eligible. And so, well, at any rate, Ben Maid and I did get married. I took out some very nice. There. Well, the thing, the shock is that I found out it's really a man's world.
Well, you didn't know that.
I really didn't know that. I really didn't know that. But and I finally got to a point. I said, hey, somebody called. Call me up. If you want to go out, call me up. I'll be glad, you know, maybe I'll turn you down instead of you. But please, I mean, it's a big burden for me to call you. And
you found it difficult.
Yeah, well, you know, I let them call me too. It's just as easy. If you feel like you want to go out with me, fine.
That's the best offer I've had all week.
That's right, you know. But it was really shocking.
When were you and Meta married?
We were married September of 1979.
And you were at the museum at that point?
Yes, I was at the museum at that point.
All right, after you moved to Federation, were you happy there?
Yes and no, and that would apply to being here also. I'm working harder than I really want to work. I wish I could cherry pick working. But when you work for Federation, when you work for Jews. Essentially, that's what I'm doing. I'm an employee. They're very demanding, much more demanding, and far less courteous than the treatment that I received at the museum. Far less respectful, and far more involved, I must also say. I want to say the positive side of all of that is that they're far more involved. They give more of themselves, they expect more of you. At this point in my life, I don't know that I have the energy to do all that. I'm doing it. And but one of the reasons I'm doing it has to do with the fact that I married somebody quite a bit younger than myself. I mean, it is 15 years younger. And I just can't bring somebody like that into a retired world. And she's not a retired person. And it is an older world, and I don't think it's right. And that's part of the penalty you pay, if it is a penalty. It's a penalty. It's part of marrying somebody, at least for me it is, somebody a lot younger than myself.
Well, you mean, you think that, I don't quite understand, the disadvantage of working in this kind of a situation is a retired, or you felt that you had to be...
I had to continue to work.
I
have to continue to work. Yes, that's right. That I have to continue to work because, and the problem is to find something where you can cherry pick. But how can you come down here to this vital community, and they're depending upon you to start a community foundation? Not that they pay me so much; they actually pay me less than I've been paid in years. But it is, if you have any pride in your own work, you've got to give your all. That's the problem. I wish I didn't have to give my all. I'd like to give a little less than my all. But you can't, you either do this or you don't do this. And you just can't say that I want to give you a little less than my all.
Did I understand you to say that Maida is working down here too?
Yeah, she's teaching. She's a professor at Nova University. I married professors.
Was she teaching?
She only was teaching, no. If she had been with the Rehabilitation Institute of Pittsburgh, you know, the Home for Crippled Children for 14 years. And she was the assistant director of the speech pathology, speech department there. They had 17 speech pathologists at that place. That's an enormous institution.
It really is.
And she also taught part-time at Pitt.
Did you arbitrarily decide to come to Florida?
No, not exactly arbitrarily. You know, the fact of the matter is that I'm now approaching 65, and you do have to think about where do you want to be at some point. Some point you just have to stop. Either the energy runs out, or you just don't have the desire any longer, or whatever, or they get rid of you, one of those things. And so we said, where do we want to be, you know, a few years, and originally, neither of us thought of Florida, but the more we came down here, and her mother lives here, I have a brother living here, I have a sister living here. Two of her closest friends, her childhood friends, one is Sandy, used to be Anita LaPatton's sister, Sandy.
Yeah.
We just had dinner with Sandy. Sandy's getting married.
Is she?
Yes. And Sandy's been a friend of hers since 5 years old. Her closest friend, and her other close friend is Elaine Hazen. You know
mm-hmm.
Elaine? Alan Hazen. That's Corky Cross's sister-in-law. Oh, okay. And she lives about 2 minutes away from us. And she saw an ad in a professional journal for a speech pathologist to teach at Florida Atlantic University. So I said, oh, why don't you apply for that? And you get that job. I'll get down to Florida. I'll find something to do. The end result was that I got a job and she did. So when she applied, I called up the Council of Jewish Federations and I said, you know, in New York, I said, if you have any openings down in Florida on the East Coast for what I'm doing, I'd be interested. And on the phone, a fellow who I know said, Arthur, you won't believe there's an opening in Boca Raton. We've been sending them all kinds of resumes. He said, but you'd be absolutely the right person at the right time for this job. So he said, let me call Bruce Marshall, who's the executive director. Called Bruce. That afternoon, about 10 minutes later, I got a call from Bruce, who had heard me speak to the UJA in New York several years ago. Bruce said, you're my man. He said, I've thrown out all the other applications. I want you. So I came down. He said, you have to go through an interview. So I went through my interview with the board, and that was pro forma. I was hired. Lady came down without a job. Before she got down, she got a job as professor at Novi University, and they're starting a speech pathology graduate school. So that's where she is.
Sounds like made in heaven.
Yeah. We're both working harder than we've ever worked.
And there's no way to pull back.
And there's no way to pull back.
All right, that brings us up to date on what you're doing. Now, would you go back and tell us about your children, where they are and what they're doing?
You know, when my children were growing up at Butler, and they said they would never leave Butler. And there's not one there now. So, and they're all living in big cities, every one of them.
Let's start with the eldest.
And none of them are associated with the Jewish communities where they're living, which is kind of sad. Had they remained in the small town, I think they would have been forced to become part of the Jewish community just by exposure, just by being obviously part of the Jewish community. But they're in the big city, and they've not been contacted by the Jewish community, nor have they contacted the Jewish community. The oldest is living in New York, in a city that is very, quite Jewish in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
She is a sculptor and lives in Tribeca in the loft. She teaches 2 days a week at the Philadelphia College of Art in Philadelphia. She had been married once, incidentally, to a Jewish sculptor, and marriage did not last. There are no children, and she's still friends with her ex-husband, who lives in Alfred, New York, where he's remarried. She currently has a boyfriend who is Jewish and very interested in being Jewish, which is kind of nice. I think she's the one who graduated high school in Israel. I don't know if you might that I mentioned it at all. I thought
no.
I had.
Maybe I don't think
back.
So.
Not really?
I don't think so.
Mm. She went graduated high school in Israel and then went to Brandeis for a year, and then gradually, after roaming around, went to Carnegie Mellon, then to Tyler, and then to Alfred University for a graduate program. And then she was apprenticed to, if that's the word, or an assistant to Mary Frank. Mary Frank is a very famous sculptor, one of the best, and lives in New York. She works in ceramic sculpture. That was the reason Jeannie got to her, because Jeannie's an expert on clay chemistry. And Mary Frank was a very famous sculptor. She was not a very good chemist. She had a little problem with some of her sculptings. Anyway, Jeannie lives in New York, and
and she has no connection with the Jewish community at all?
Not as a Jewish community. She has connection with Jews.
Yeah.
Her boyfriend is Jewish. He's he is connected to the Jewish community. He's an active Jew. But she has no relationship to such things as Federation or Hadassah or
Would you not think that that's because of her profession?
I think that's a lot to do with it, her profession, yes. and the lifestyle of those people. And they tend not to be people who belong to organized society anyway. They're individualists. And we keep a very close touch. I speak to her very frequently. I see her not as frequently, but we talk at least once a week, twice a week. She's 35. And the current boyfriend, I like very much.
That's very helpful.
Yeah, I think he's sane, which I can't say for all of her previous associations. He's a computer program for the city of New York. He's also a professional photographer on the side. So there's that art connection there. Looks exactly like her mother, only smaller. So her mother will always be alive as long as Jeannie's alive. Physically, you look at her and you know it's the same family. And she worries about me.
But I'm sure she worries less now that you're here and taken care of.
Well, I think Meta has lessened their responsibility, but. And she's very close to Meta, which is good. They're soulmates, so I'm glad that that's worked out so well.
Number two, Chanel?
Shauna. Jeannie is the oldest, and then there's Jonathan. Jonathan is a lawyer, and he lives in San Diego.
What a nice place to live.
And he's has a live-in girlfriend from Butler, not Jewish. Beth has a nice Jewish name.
Mm-hmm.
Beth Fulsner. And as Beta always says, when she sees Beth, she has this tiny little nose. She said, "How does she breathe?"
How did he land in San Diego?
Well, he landed in San Diego because when he went to law school, he said he wanted to go to law school. He was going to work very hard in law school. He wanted to be a place where at least the weather was good. And San Diego. He went to the University of San Diego Law School. And after he graduated the law school, he just decided to stay there if he could and find a job, which he did. And he now works for, I think it's called California Federal. It's he's the in-house lawyer for their mortgage company.
And he is not assimilated into the Jewish society there?
Not at all. Again, he's not married. Perhaps if he were married, he would be assimilated, maybe, possibly. One of the things that they've all said to me, the ones who are working for people like my son is working for, and my son in Texas, who we'll hear about shortly, is that they're made aware that they're Jews. By the business society they live in.
Does
that in other words, they know they're Jews by that through that method more than any other.
Would you
method.
Say that would be an overt form of anti-Semitism?
It's maybe a covert form of anti-Semitism. Yes, it's still out there. They're not quite. Got to be, you know, you're still the minority.
I think particularly out west. Right there, I'm going to wait 1 second because I think this tape is at the end and I would like to turn it before we do anything else.